Hi there, and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Have you rated and reviewed the show on iTunes? If you haven't, I'd be grateful if you go there. I know you don't have to go back once you subscribe, but I'd be grateful if you would make the trip. Here's what some people are saying in reviews. Gold for nonprofits. The best nonprofit show, period. Although that person had ellipses after that period. So it's period ellipses. I'm amazed at the variety, quality, and depth of his interviews. That person probably thinks I'm shallow. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been amazed. He should just be fulfilled in his expectations being met. You have no idea what the trouble I went through to put those three reviews up there. Different accounts. I had to go to a public library, use the computer there. So please supplement those three that I put up with your own 1 to 5 star rating and review the show. I'd be grateful. This is Friday, April 12th, and I very much hope that you were with me last week, because I would develop acute pancreatitis if I heard that you had missed Talk Between the Generations. Phyllis Weiss-Hazarow, president of Praxis Development Council, is a consultant and coach in cross-generational communications. Think 60-ish boss and 25-ish employee, or 70-year-old fundraiser and 30-year-old donor. Who has the power in that relationship? Phyllis had strategies for understanding and working across the generations. This week, followship. Allison Fine, co-author of The Networked Nonprofit, has been thinking lately about opening organizational culture to allow nonprofits to be more reactive to the interests and motivations of their followers while still keeping Oz in sight. And she's going to share her thoughts. Also, social media boundaries. Our legal contributor, Jean Takagi, from the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group, NEO, suggests rules for your use of social media. It's not a free-for-all for your employees and volunteers. Jean will help you stay out of trouble. Between the guests on Tony's Take Two, the IRS is still using Form 990 to inquire about your compliance with state charity registration laws. Sounds thrilling, but I can make it a little more interesting than it sounds. My pleasure now to welcome Allison Fine. She studies and writes at the intersection of social media and social change. She's author of the award-winning book Momentum, Igniting Social Change in the Connected Age, published by Wiley. Her latest book is The Networked Nonprofit, co-authored with Beth Cantor, also Wiley published. She's a contributor to Harvard Business Review Online, that's at hbr.org. She hosts a monthly podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy called Social Good. I have one of those too. And she blogs, a fine blog, at allisonfine.com. There are two L's in Allison. On Twitter, she's at afine. Allison with two L's, welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
Thanks for having me, Tony. I'm delighted to be here.
Thanks, Allison. You work at the intersection of social media and social change.
Yeah, sounds like a crossing guard, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, what's there? What's at that intersection?
Well, an awful lot of activity and a reshaping of institutional life right now, whereas what used to be on the outside for institutions are in, what used to be on the inside is out, and that's the kind of changing of the contours in the landscape that I've been taking a hard look at over the last several years.
What do you mean what's in was, what's out was in, what's in is out? What do you mean by that?
Well, so imagine, Tony, you're running a small social service agencies.
Sure.
Agency, and there are bloggers out there and tweeters and a whole bunch of other folks who are interested in your issue, and they're looking hard. So those folks who used to be on the outside, not really able to see inside, are poking around now, and they're talking about your issues, and they're talking about your organization. And on the other side, the staff of organizations, whether organizational leadership likes it or not, are on social media channels and talking about the organization as well. So what used to be on the inside is now on the outside. And what it does mainly for very traditional nonprofit leaders is scare the heck out of them.
Yeah. There's scared about losing control.
Yeah, they already lost control.
Ego.
They continue to be scared that they're going to lose it.
Okay. And what are your thoughts around followship? What do you mean by followship?
So now we're looking at an environment, an ecosystem, where organizations are flatter. some by economic necessity and others because they're using social media and networks better. And there's this changing relationship, as I said, between inside and outside. And the reality is, Tony, that people who are open to helping causes and nonprofits aren't sitting back on their couches waiting to be told what to do. They aren't waiting for the latest press release to come out. So smart organizations are understanding that in this new environment, they have to lead by following their crowd. And it's a very different dynamic. It doesn't mean they're not leaders, right? They are setting big goals and saying to folks, we're trying to get from here to there. You know, we're trying to end homelessness. We're trying to reduce obesity, whatever the big goal is. But we need you, our crowd, to help us get from here to there. And you're going to do that by being creative and energetic and working side by side with us.
But why do I, as the leader of this very well run, astutely run, very efficiently run, very productive social service organization that I'm head of, why do I need to follow? Don't I know the goal? You say you like to say Oz, and how best to get there? I mean, I have a strategic plan. I have a board. We've interviewed like-minded agencies in the town, in the community. We've included our community in those interviews to produce that strategic plan. I mean, I think I know best.
I'm sure you do. But the bottom line is, Tony, you might think you know best, but social problems are enormously complex. We aren't making progress in a lot of areas, and if organizations are very honest with themselves, they'll see oftentimes a lack of progress. And we can't do this work alone. We have got to do this work in communities with communities. And the only way to do that is to treat people as part of your effort, not the foot soldiers doing only what you ask them to do.
So you're taking a look at the fact that things like hunger and poverty and homelessness and domestic violence
issue,
and climate change.
Any education issue, any literacy issue, any economic issue.
We've been at these things for generations.
Time. You know, so look over the last 30 years. The needle hasn't moved on these things. Not because we're not trying, not because there aren't smart people doing the work, but because they are enormously difficult to solve. And institutions alone can't solve them.
It's very dismaying to me as I think about all those things that we've been at for generations.
But don't be dismayed, Tony, because the great news is we've got this, you know, very vital, robust, energetic new way of looking at the world using our social media toolkit and engaging networks of people to do great things.
But
I'm very encouraged.
Okay, but you're concerned also that leaders are not engaging in the right way. They're more following their written strategic plan, or they're treating, as you suggested, constituents as foot soldiers. You know, do this, now volunteer, now sign the petition, now donate, now come to our event.
And they are exhausted. I spoke to over 500 social service leaders in Wichita, Kansas yesterday. Lovely, lovely people. And they are exhausted, Tony, and they are struggling financially, and they're getting burned out. And this is a large reason why. Pushing the boulder uphill by yourself as a siloed institution is not an effective way of working.
Okay.
And we don't have to do it anymore. We have an alternative.
Okay. Fellowship is our alternative.
That's exactly right.
Okay. I'm not dismayed anymore. I'm already uplifted.
Okay, good.
In just 90 seconds, you turn me around. all right. So you want to, you say, you know, take down silos, break down walls, open the culture. We have just like 2 minutes or so before our first break. What's our first step? We need to know where these people are, what they want to do.
The first step is listening.
Yeah.
Right. So the first step is once you have come to the understanding of I need to work differently. You know, there is a world out there that I can connect with, but I have to do it in the right way. Then you begin by listening. What are people out there talking about in regards to my issue, in regards maybe to my institution, and how can I best help them?
more listening than we did in the interviews for creating the strategic plan.
That's exactly right. And in a more natural way of listening, through conversationally, Tony, right? This isn't science. This is being human and asking people, tell me what you think. Tell me how we're doing. Tell me why you were dismayed last year when we didn't do X. I really think social media provides an opportunity for us to rehumanize ourselves out there.
So I, as the head of this social, I'd like to be CEO rather than executive director.
Okay.
President and CEO of this social service agency. So I can be, or I should be, engaging directly?
Well, you know, social media is not a spectator sport. It's a contact sport.
Yeah.
You need everybody hands-on. And in order for you to run your agency, I think you've got to be engaged with your community.
All right. I don't want to break my collarbone, though, like the baseball player did just yesterday.
That would be bad.
That was just too much contact. But
you can't go on injured reserve. We need you on the field.
Okay. And out. I mean, I can be having face-to-face conversations with my folks, too, right?
Yes. Thanks for the reminder. I never, ever want to give anybody the impression that social media substitutes for in-person engagement. It augments it. It never, ever takes the place of it.
We're going to pick up right there. We got to go away for a couple minutes. I'll have some live listener love when we come back and continue this conversation with Allison Fine about followship. She'll stay with me, and I hope you do, too.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you confused about which diet is right for you? Are you tired of being tired? How about improving your energy, strength, and appearance? Hi, I'm Rika Keck, a holistic nutrition and wellness consultant. If you have answered yes to any of my questions, contact me now at nyintegratedhealth.com or at 646-285-8588. Initiate change and transform your life.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving Communications. That's the answer.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Talking Alternative.
Konnichiwa. Live listener love to Tokyo and Sapporo, Japan. Konnichiwa. Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Live listener love also, California. We got San Francisco and Tustin, California. Welcome. San Antonio and Clifton, Texas. Live listener love to you as well. And lots of others to come. All right, Allison, what should we be listening? If we're going to be listening, we need to be asking questions of the folks who are connected to my cause. What questions should I be asking?
Well, it's going to depend entirely on your particular cause, Tony, and where you are in your life cycle of your organization. You're just starting. Are you more mature? I really strongly encourage people to actually start by just listening and not speaking. Not something that we are taught to do anywhere. I didn't take a graduate course in it. Did you?
No, and in fact, when I was in the dark days when I used to practice law, I was
right.
I was always upset that there wasn't a billing code for listening or thinking. That was another. There
right.
was never a code for thinking.
Right.
I always had to be doing something, producing some document, some deliverable. Why couldn't I just bill half an hour for thinking about your case? Couldn't do it.
No, I understand that. And we, you know, in the nonprofit sector, we value busyness a great deal. But it's very important to get a feel for what people are talking about, what they're passionate about, what they're interested in, and then to begin to practice asking questions. Here's a great irony, Tony. We actually have to remember how to ask a good question because organizations aren't good at it. We are so used to broadcasting, so used to wrapping up ourselves in talking points that are closed, that learning how to honestly, openly, authentically ask a real question that you want to know the answer to, that you don't already know the answer to, takes some practice.
Mm. And, of course, this all feeds into real engagement in the social networks.
Exactly, exactly. So think about it, Tony, and think about the number of times you've been approached by a nonprofit, right? That there is they send you a press release or they send you a, you know, direct mail piece, and those aren't conversations, right? Those are just messages being sent at you.
Yeah, it's a broadcast.
It's a broadcast, right? Now think about the difference of if you got from somebody who said, you know, I know that you came to our event last year. How'd it go for you? What do you think about it? What do you think about us? What can we do better? Right? That's a conversation.
Mm. Okay. Okay. Now, we need to keep our goals in sight.
Yep.
You want me to be flexible in how I get to them.
That's exactly right. There's a group called Epic Change.
Epic?
Epic Change.
Okay.
They are raising money to give to for global poverty alleviation. And the way they go into every year is they create a Facebook group. They invite their, you know, folks who've expressed an interest in their cause, more rather than fewer into the group.
Mm-hmm.
Say, here's the goal for the year. We're trying to raise X amount of money, or we're trying to work in a new country. How are we going to do it? How are we going to get from here to there? And people really engage. It takes those great facilitation skills. That's what followership is all about, right? It's not the Wild West. You're not just letting it go anywhere it wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be a great cocktail party host to make that happen, right? Keeping the conversation going. But it really is being respectful of the creativity and smarts of your supporters and engaging them in a process of getting you from here to there.
What am I going to say to my board that looks at me? Let's say this is a 5-year-old agency, and I've got a $750,000 annual budget.
Right.
Trying to keep it fairly modest, but you know, I'd like to have achieved something in 5 years, for Pete's sake. My board expects me to be the leader. What am I going to say to them when I'm asking them to allow the agency to be flexible and take into not only take into consideration, but follow the lead of the crowd.
So if you have a very skeptical board, which would be a shame, right? We really got to think about who serves on boards and why we keep packing them with so many lawyers.
Yes, much bigger topics, right?
From your former life, right? Because lawyers find uncertainty very, very unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
As you well know. So if that's the kind of board that you have, what I strongly recommend is that you try followership as an experiment. Take one small area in which you work for this year. Maybe it's one fundraising event. Maybe it's one new program or revamping an existing program, and try out the idea. So you're not throwing the whole organization out. You're continuing with the things that work, but you are figuring out a new way to work with people that will be particularly appealing to younger supporters. That, I think, is a case you can make to any board.
Okay, we'll take it in bite-sized pieces.
Yep.
Could it be? Could we do this around an event?
Absolutely.
You had suggested the event earlier. How did we do? How did we look? What could we have done better?
So think about the difference, Tony, of posting on Facebook from a group that you've liked that says March 19th is our gala dinner. Buy your tickets now. From a post that goes up 6 months earlier that says, we'd like to do a spring event. What kinds of things have you been to lately that you like? What kinds of things do you think we could do and start a conversation about it?
Hmm.
Which one do you feel more excited about?
Yeah, I'm going to participate in the latter more.
Yeah.
You've engaged me. Now, I have a pretty sizable ego, though.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for me now. All right, so you've helped me persuade the board. Now I have to persuade myself that I don't have all the answers in our community.
So if you feel that you have all the answers, I would suggest that social change work is probably not a good fit for you, Tony.
No, therapy is probably wise.
All the answers, right?
Psychiatry, perhaps even psychotropic drugs. Or I'm already using them. I'm probably already on psychotropics, so it's led me to this delusion.
This is really, really hard work. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't need smart, confident people running organizations. Of course we do. But if their ego is so large they don't allow other people to help them solve large community problems, then they're not going to get very far. Because these are collective problems that need collective solutions.
You're critical of President Obama's campaign back from 2008. What happened there?
I don't think so much in 2008 as opposed to this last one. So 2008 was great fun, right? They let people come in and gave them a menu of things that you could do and let them go, which was great. Then they forgot about them once they got elected, didn't quite know what to do with a multi-million person crowd once they got into the White House because, you know, God forbid somebody should talk about marijuana or something that made them uncomfortable. So they put them all into a direct mail donor base, and that's what they did this last election cycle, was that they had very clear, tightly controlled ways of managing people as fundraisers and as voters, and that was it. So I found this last cycle enormously disempowering for people.
Mm, I see. It's more how they treated the 2008 followers.
Exactly.
In right? 2012.
We don't really think you're so smart and creative anymore. We don't really need your help that way. All we need are your checks and your votes. People have a lot more to give than that.
Yeah. Ego. We know it now. We've been in office 4 years. We know what we're doing.
We know what we're doing, and we're going to control this thing to get from here to there.
Allison Fine is an author, most recently of The Networked Nonprofit, which is widely published, and you can find it on Amazon. You can also find it on at Barnes & Noble. I actually found it a little less expensive at Barnes & Noble. And I want to send some more live listener love. So, to New Bern, North Carolina, Frederick, Maryland, and LaSalle, Illinois, live listener love. We have listeners in China. Ni hao. That's from Shanghai and Hebei. The Asian continent, very well represented for Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Thank you. I'm glad you're with us week to week. Allison, do you think a presidential candidate could emerge from the social networks?
I think what we're going to see, Tony, is we're going to see it start at a more grassroots level. We're going to start to see some mayors around the country and then some governors who come up this way. It's too hard to try to scale this at a national level first, I think. But you're going to find somebody who's very good at this. And, you know, Rand Paul could be that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Tea Party really gets followership.
Are they particularly
grassroots organizing online in a way that other people don't?
They are particularly good at that online engagement.
They are fantastic at it.
How so? What is it they do that you admire?
They allow lots and lots of people to talk very loudly, right? So being loud doesn't bother them at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of their DNA. being loud bothers other organizations an awful lot. It scares them. They support local organizing without having a need to try to control all the local organizing. Surf Rider Foundation does the same thing, right? Gives you an idea of what you should be doing.
Say the
local Tea Party, talk about these kinds of things, but when and how you do it, that's up to you.
Say the name of the foundation again. You cut out a little bit.
I'm sorry. The Surf Rider Foundation.
Okay, thank you. Surf Rider. Okay.
Surf Rider. It's a nonprofit, 35 years old, started in California to provide coastal cleanup. They have hundreds of chapters around the country. And, Tony, they basically let them do what they want to do. If you want to mash up our logo, go ahead. If you want to do street cleanup this year instead of coastal cleanup, go ahead. And in the end, these folks do an amazing amount of work and just engage thousands of volunteers in this. Surfrider, like the Tea Party, understands that you can provide big goals, you can provide the contours of what we need done, and then let people go.
Those are excellent examples. I never thought of the Tea Party as such a good example of online engagement. But yeah, everything you're saying is true. They do. They set broad outlines, and then they have hundreds of local activists. Hundreds of local chapters.
And they're not worried about dissent. They're not worried about disagreement. They're not worried about some yelling. You know, what happens too often with organizations, Tony, is they are so concerned about anything that smacks of criticism that they find it very difficult to step outside in unguarded ways.
Hmm. All right. This strategic plan that I've mentioned that my organization spent about $20,000 on for a consultant to help administer and do the interviews and coalesce, and we had that nice PowerPoint deck that they presented to the board a year ago. What am I going to do with my strategic plan?
Throw it out.
Oh, Allison, fine.
I was being very polite when you mentioned it the first time, and I didn't bring it up. What a waste of money it was.
Well, all right. Well, let's talk about it now because I've got my board on board, and
yeah.
I've set my ego aside. So that's a very big step. It hasn't solved the problem yet, right?
So look, how many groups do you know that spent all that time and money on a strategic plan, do everything in the plan, and at the end go, boy, that was the best thing we ever did? Right? Maybe one or two over my career. Mainly what you hear is, holy smokes, we spent a lot of time on that thing.
Yes,
right?
For sure.
And in that process, you're no closer to your community as an organization, right? You had an outsider talk to them as though you couldn't talk to them, which I don't understand.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
Why can't you talk to your
own
community?
That's
Why do
the
you
core
of this pseudoscientific approach
right.
Data collection.
Because that's the
and,
core
and
of their plan.
As, you know, I was a program evaluator for a long time, Tony. So, you know, I have respect for people who collect data. But to say that you need an outsider to come in and interview stakeholders for your organization as
right.
opposed to the conversations you should be having every day with the people who are most important to your efforts, I don't get it. And then the worst part, though, is pretending that we can project out years at a time right now. When anybody who's successful in business will tell you right now that you can't plan out more than a year. You just can't.
You're a troublemaker.
I am.
Okay.
And I'm small, so people really kind of leave me alone.
I admire troublemakers. I like things to be shaken up. It's cool.
I call it pot stirring.
You call it pot stirring. Okay.
Pot stirring, right? Somebody's got to stir the pot.
Yeah, not so much troublemaker. All right. I'll call you a troublemaker.
Okay.
You can call yourself a pot stirrer. how does the Occupy movement do? We just have about 2 minutes left. What's your assessment of them?
I think that I think it's fascinating. I think they did a great job of turning out a lot of people, but I think of that kind of organizing, Tony, like a pointillist painting. It's one dot, and it's going to take a lot of dots over a lot of time for that thing to mature. It's not over yet. It's just in its infancy.
Allison Fine, I hope you're going to come back.
My pleasure. I hope so.
It's been my pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much. Allison Fine.
Thanks, Tony.
My pleasure. Her latest book, The Network Nonprofit, co-authored with Beth Cantor. You can find it at Amazon. You can find it at Barnes & Noble. And on Twitter, she's A Fine. Thank you again, Allison.
My pleasure, Tony. Talk to you soon.
We're going to go away. When we come back, Tony's Take Two about some charity registration technicalities and then social media boundaries with Gene Takagi. Stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloan Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music Power,
Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloan.
Live Thursdays at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Lively conversation, top trends, and sound advice. That's Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. And I'm Jana Eggers, Senior Vice President, Products and Marketing from Blackbaud.
And I'm Tony Martinetti, Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. Time for my take two. Taxes are on everybody's mind, April 15th coming up. So I'm talking about the tax form that charities fill out, the 990. And between that form and one of its schedules, there are two questions that probe your office's compliance with state charity registration laws, which I always think is interesting. It's a federal agency questioning whether you're complying with state laws. It's not a good idea to fudge on those questions because your 990 is signed by an officer under penalty of perjury. So you want to be conscious of your compliance with those registration laws in each state where you are soliciting donations. It's not enough to just be registered in your home state if you are soliciting in other states. The post on my blog is IRS continues inquiry on charity registration compliance. The blog is at TonyMartinetti.com, and that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, the 12th of April, 15th show of the year. Gene Takagi is with me. He's our regular legal contributor. He's the principal at NEO, the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group in San Francisco. He edits the popular NonprofitLawBlog.com, and he is at GTAK, G-T-A-K, on Twitter. Gene Takagi, welcome back.
Thanks, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to have
you back.
It's good to talk to you. We want to need to set some boundaries around social media. Why do we need more than just sort of usage guidelines?
Well, let me first get to some of your opening comments, Tony. Dark days when you were a lawyer?
Oh, yes. Oh, were you listening from San Francisco? Gene, I love that you love the practice of law. It did not do for me what it does for you.
Right, and I appreciate that, Tony. It definitely isn't for everyone. And I heard Allison's comments as well about lawyers finding uncertainty unsettling and probably being deal breakers and such.
Well, now, I don't think she said... Did she say deal breakers? I know she said...
No. I sort of added that.
Okay, well, let's not put words in her mouth, because defamation is one of the things we're going to be talking about shortly.
There we go, Tony. So, that's part of the reason why you need rules in this game. And so I actually agree with Allison that lawyers do find uncertainty unsettling.
Yeah.
And we can sometimes be deal breakers, which are my words. And part of the reason why is that because of... We give advice to some organizations, and you know, if a consultant were to give that advice and has 99% effectiveness, and for 99% of the organization it works really well, there is that 1% that it might not work well for, and they might actually get in trouble using that advice. With the lawyer, we can't afford to do that. We've got to make sure that we're protecting all 100%, which means we can't quite be as aggressive in some ways. In other ways, we can let organizations and our clients know how we can empower them, to let them know what is okay to do and that they should feel comfortable doing it, that it may be part of their duties in terms of furthering their mission in order to engage in those things. So that's one of the reasons why we want to have rules, so there's a better understanding of how to play this game of using social media. And, you know, I think, Tony, when you play any game, you should read the rules first, right? So you understand what you're doing.
Yeah. My favorite game is Monopoly. I don't like other players to read the rules.
Just as long as you know it.
Yeah, I know. And then you know, I use the rules as sort of guidelines. And then, you know, I'll borrow a little from the bank and things like that, you know, at below market rates and things like that.
So let's go actually into a couple of those things that you've talked about. Borrowing money from the bank.
Okay.
So let's say... you know, we organize this nationwide effort and have our volunteers go out and create different events, fundraising events, mm-hmm. in different locations throughout the country on behalf of our organization and furthering our movement. Well, let's say we've got 10 of these things going on and 7 go really well.
Can we, Gene, can we take an example? I'm thinking of MoveOn.org. They I frequently get their emails, attend an event in Manhattan or the Bronx or, you know, can somebody in, well, they know that I'm in New York, so they don't ask me to host elsewhere, but they're certainly doing these things throughout the country.
Yeah, and a lot of organizations are now using Facebook and other platforms to mobilize their supporters throughout the country.
Right, okay.
So, you know, let's say it's an organization that's like MoveOn, that's got a nationwide presence with a lot of supporters throughout, and they've got some active people in different locations.
Yes.
And again, let's say there are 10 events and 7 go without a hitch and raise a lot of money for the organization. But one of the things you asked, and one of the things you talked about in your take two, is are they registered in those states in which the volunteers are suddenly engaging in these fundraising activities? Because if they're not, that can get them into trouble, right? Tony, I think you know better than anybody.
It can. The volunteer is acting as an agent of the organization at that point, or is that a question?
I think that's a question. And, you know, the more that the organization is telling the volunteer on how to organize the event and what rules should apply to the event and how the money should be collected and forwarded to the charity, I think it looks more and more like it's the organization's event, and charity registration has got to be something that's considered.
Okay. Now, I'm skirting jargon jail. We haven't talked about jargon jail for weeks. I'm disappointed. Too many of my guests are plain talking, plain language. I don't like that. I like abstruse language. It talks over everybody's head.
I'll get there.
So why don't you help define for me, because I said, are they an agent? But that actually is a term of art. It has legal import, doesn't it?
Yeah, so generally an agent is acting on the authority and on behalf of the principal. So if I ask you, Tony, and you accept that you're going to make a donation on my behalf to another charity and I give you the money to make that donation, you're acting as my agent. You're not making your own donation of money. You're donating the money on my behalf.
I
and
see.
You have certain responsibilities by taking on that relationship.
I'm the agent and you're the principal in that example.
Correct. So okay. If a charity tells a volunteer agent to start fundraising them and organizing an event on their behalf, then it's really the charity's event and the volunteer is acting as their agent, which means the charity has responsibilities in that jurisdiction.
Okay. Okay.
So the other thing that you raised is, well, what if somebody just took off with the money?
Mm-hmm.
What if you got a volunteer there, but you have no staff presence there, and you don't really know this volunteer, you've just sort of engaged with them online, and all of a sudden they're holding this event for you, and they take off with the money. Now what happens? What did you do? What showing of reasonable care did you take to make sure something like that wouldn't happen? Then the awful thing is, what if somebody gets hurt at this event?
And right, and now, in this case, it doesn't even have to be an event that is a solicitation event. Like, maybe we're just rallying the troops, but we're not asking for any money. We're not soliciting, just trying to, maybe we're all watching a video together, or it's some, you know, kind of activist activity, but no money is changing hands. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So something else could happen.
Yeah, exactly right. So whether it's just being an educational event, and you've got some people out there that have gathered together under the charity's name, and, you know, they've gotten together, and maybe there weren't any steps to prevent some risks, or maybe it's like a walkathon. So maybe it is a solicitation event that's part fun, part solicitation. But there weren't these risk management steps that were looked at, and the charity didn't really take any steps to make sure that no harms could be prevented that were reasonably foreseeable possibilities of that. So those are things that charities have to think about when they start to mobilize their supporters. Are the supporters holding their own events, in which case do those people have to register in order to fundraise for another charity? That might be an issue as well. Or is it the charity's own event, in which case the charity's got to think about registration and also creating rules of the game, again, that have to do with holding that event to make sure that the people who attend or the people whose money gets solicited are protected.
I've got two troublemakers on the show today. You're a lot of trouble, Gene. You're asking a lot of questions. Let's try to help with some answers. Now we know what we have to think about, but what are we going to do? Should we not be hosting these events, or can insurance help, or we need written regulations about what volunteers can do in other places? What are we supposed to do?
Yeah, I think we've got to figure out first whose event is it? Is it the charity's event, or is it the individuals that are gathering together that are raising funds on their own? And if they're raising funds on their own, are they going to get in trouble, and should we try to help them understand what their responsibilities are and what limitations there are for them to start raising money on their own without being under the umbrella, if you will, of the charity? So rules of the game first. Whose event is it? And if the charity has authorized and encouraged it, it should try to protect those people who are going to organize the event as well as those people who are going to attend the event. And having rules there instead of just guidelines makes perfect sense to me. You're not allowed to serve alcohol to minors. May seem, very simplistic and obvious, but mm-hmm. sometimes when you've got volunteers who you're unaware of, you've not screened, you've not interviewed them, you've got to be really explicit about what's okay and what's not okay, even if you think it's obvious. So rules of the game and rules of the event, I think, are something that you have to have. You've got to also have some people, on the charity's staff or their volunteers, if they're an all-volunteer organization, really think about risk management of that event. What risks are involved? And should we take steps like having a first aid kit available, or having some people there, or having a written release and waiver of liability form that all event participants sign? So those are things to think about. And then the charity registration thing on top of that, if it's an event of any significance, I think you have to really seriously think about that and probably buy your book, Tony.
Okay. Or have me register for you.
There you go.
Now, what if the agent doesn't follow the rules? Then is the organization protected at least?
Well, maybe, maybe not.
Oh, geez.
But what could
Haven't
happen
you got
is
any
that
clear
the
cut?
Organization can blame the agent and sue the agent. But whoever got hurt from that, if it's a charity's event, is going to sue kind of everybody. And if the charity has a deeper pocket than the agent, and if it's just a volunteer who may not have a lot of net worth, then the charity may have a deeper pocket, and the plaintiff's lawyer will go after the charity in that case. And if they're not registered on top of all of this in that state, it's going to look even worse for the charity in terms of saying, well, we tried our best and we didn't do it right.
Yeah, we had rules, but the solicitation was illegal because the charity wasn't registered in the state. That looks bad.
Yeah, and your insurance company might, even if you have insurance, might say, well, you're operating illegally. We don't insure that.
Wow. Okay. So we strayed a little bit from social media, but that's fine because we're talking about events which might be propagated through social media. What about more directly, the advocacy online?
Sure. I mean, so advocacy is a big thing for nonprofits, and I'm just a big proponent of nonprofits engaging in a lot of advocacy to further their mission. But social media channels, again, allow a lot of questions to arise, like whose message is being sent. If you've allowed staff members and volunteers in this kind of followership model that Allison is describing and where everybody is contributing, are you going to be sending conflicting messages? And are some of those messages going to actually be attributed to the organization and not be a communication of the type that the organization is allowed to do, like an electioneering communication or jargon jail, right, Tony, electioneering. endorsing a political candidate, which a 501c3 cannot do, but an individual can do. So it gets a little gray when an individual uses an account that has the organization's name somehow attached. Whose account is it, and is that communication okay?
Okay, but what about, I mean, Allison was sort of seeking feedback from the community. I mean, suppose someone uses their own account to post something on the organization's Facebook page or points addresses a post on Twitter to the organization. I mean, that's, but the person's using their own account.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Would that be okay, though? I mean, it's, the organization's not responsible for that one, is it? Even if it's just on their Facebook page or somebody else posted it?
Well, let's think about that. What if it was a really defamatory statement against somebody? Or what if it was endorsing a candidate for political office, Tony, and the organization has control of that Facebook page,
oh.
of being able to delete that comment out of there? Should they do it, or should they just let it sit there? My feeling is, conservatively, you're going to want to delete something that would be illegal if the charity had posted it itself. Obviously, you don't want to chill opinions and participation of your supporters on the Facebook page, but you don't want, you know, people to flame or defame others, and you certainly don't want the charity be to attributed with endorsing candidates or engaging in some sort of private benefit that benefits the organization's insiders. Those can all get the organization into a lot of trouble.
We got to go away for a couple minutes. When we come back, Gene and I will keep talking about the social media boundaries, and I've got some live listener love for the Korean Peninsula. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. Anyo Hasayo for Seoul, Yongsan, and Daejeon, Korea. Anyo Hasayo. As I said last week, especially South Korea in our thoughts, lots of saber rattling. You know, I saw a 70-something interviewed, and he said the North is just like a schoolyard bully. It's no big deal. And then I saw a 20-something interviewed who said she was nervous and pays attention to where exits are when she's in buildings. So anyway, our thoughts are with you, South Korea. Gene, let's see about okay. So let's continue with this online. All these questions about online. You think that a nonprofit should delete things that it wouldn't be able to print or post itself on, say, Facebook or Twitter?
Yeah, well, I think it depends on the channel that you're using. Sometimes you've got listservs where you've got a charity that's decided not to moderate the content, but put in disclaimers. That might be one set of rules that applies. But with your Facebook account, I think you've got to be careful, especially if it's a page that's under the control of the charity. If there are comments on there, again, that would be hurtful to the charity or hurtful to others. That's something that you might think about deleting. And if it's obviously going to be in violation of laws, you're going to want to report it if it's against Facebook's own privacy or policies as well. But to protect the organization, I think that's really important.
And that gets into what we were talking about earlier about defamatory statements. Could also be just like harassment.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got to be careful there. Sometimes employees or even managers will use social media channels now to communicate with their the people that report to them. And you've got to be very, very careful that they're not sending messages that if they communicated in real life or by email is not all of a sudden better because it's being broadcast on social media.
Aren't there also issues around posting other people's content, either an excerpt or even just linking to it? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's a great question, Tony. It gets a little bit confusing when we're talking about copyrights and copyright protection. There are a lot of nonprofits out there that are just excerpting from other sites and thinking that as long as you attribute that source, that is okay. And that might not just be content, written content, but that could be photos and music as well to accompany presentations. You got to be careful because somebody else owns that content, and just because they've published it on the web doesn't mean they've given free permission for anybody else to copy and use it. So that can get organizations into trouble. There are some exceptions for fair use, which might involve parody or commentary or criticism, and sometimes for nonprofit educational purposes, but that can get really vague. So nonprofits really want to know what they're doing when they are borrowing or excerpting content from other sites or from other individuals and then suddenly posting it on their own sites.
And again, even with attribution, that may not be sufficient?
Yeah, attribution doesn't cure it. So you've got to make sure that either you've gotten written permission to use that content or you're using it in a fair way that would not create an infringement liability issue.
Okay, but those fair ways, those are the exceptions that you were talking about in fair use, and they're pretty well defined.
Well,
not so well defined.
Yeah,
well, okay, but they're specific categories.
All right. Yeah, and they're definitely enforced in different ways in different jurisdictions. So if you just read, a website resource on fair use, don't rely on that. But I do encourage all nonprofits, if you are borrowing or excerpting or commenting on other people's content and putting it up on your own sites, to make sure you understand what the rules are. So do look some good, reputable web resources for that, and then move on from there. In California, we've got an organization called Public Counsel that's got excellent information on copyright and fair use, and I think other states' organizations could probably look at that stuff as well, because some of the state laws will be similar, and just get a general idea of what the rules are.
And that's Public Counsel, C-O-U-N-S-E-L?
That's right.
Okay. Just a couple minutes left before we have to go away, Gene. So if there is a violation or something you're just concerned about. You talked about deleting the post. What else should we be conscious of?
Well, I think the important thing, especially on a governance level, so now if we talk about board duties now, Tony, is the board to develop a social media policy for the organization. So, they can delegate the drafting out to management, but to have a social media policy and to make sure that everybody using social media on behalf of the organization understands what the rules are and what the risks are, because those volunteers and supporters want to do good things for the organization and for its missions. They don't want to get the organization into trouble. But what happens is oftentimes they just don't know what the rules and risks are. So educating them through a policy, have guidelines for sure, but also have solid rules in place that don't allow them to do things that would violate the law. I think that's critical.
Just like 30 seconds left, Gene. How about apologizing on the site where the violation occurred?
sometimes can work, sometimes can get you into more trouble. So, you know, sometimes you're just stirring the pot even more, to borrow Howlison's words, and that can create more derision. So it's sort of look at it on a case-by-case basis. Look at senior management. The American Red Cross put out a tweet before that says, this was a rogue tweet that says, when we drink, we do it right, getting slizzard. This was a mistake. Somebody was using their personal account and thought they were using their personal account instead of the American Red Cross account. American Red Cross immediately came up with an apology that said, we've deleted the rogue tweet, but rest assured the Red Cross is sober and we've confiscated the keys. Humor, apology, and everything worked out just fine.
All important points to keep in mind. Social media is not just a Wild West. Gene Takagi, principal of NEO. You'll find his blog at nonprofitlawblog.com. You'll find him on Twitter at GTAK, GTAC. Gene, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony.
My pleasure. We'll talk to you again next month.
Okay, looking forward to it.
We've got some final live listener love to Taiwan. We don't know the city, but Taiwan, welcome, and ni hao. Next week, a conversation with Amy Sample Ward, Redux, part deux. We're talking about her new book, co-authored book, Social Change Anytime, Everywhere. We started last month, and there's more to cover about your fundraising calendar and social media. And I'm hoping for a special appearance by Tim, Amy's dad, hoping we can get him to call in. I'd like to have a little fun with Tim Sample. We're all over the social web. You can't make a click without La Dura Spacatesta. Trying to say, smacking your head hard into Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Pinterest, for example. I've got boards for the show and my blog. My favorite board on Pinterest, though, that I've got is Women Leading Nonprofits. Lots of videos of female nonprofit CEOs, like Abby Fallick of Global Citizen Year and Marion Wright Edelman of the Children's Defense Fund. If you can suggest some that I'm missing, please do. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer, but not today. Today, the line producer is Janice Taylor. We don't have an assistant producer, but we struggled through. Janice filled both roles. The show's social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media, and the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. I hope you'll be with me next Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, at Talking Alternative Broadcasting, found at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, I'm Dana.
And I'm Don.
We are certified mediators, and I am a family and couples licensed therapist and author of Please Don't Buy Me Ice Cream.
Our show, New Beginnings, is about helping you and your family recover financially and emotionally and start the beginning of your life.
We'll answer your questions on divorce, family court, co-parenting, personal development, new relationships, blending families, and more.
Dana and I will bring you to a place of empowerment and belief that even though marriages may end, families are forever.
Join us every Monday starting September 10th at 10 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
TalkingAlternative.com.